You've been told you should care about your faith, but you just don't. Prayer feels empty. Church feels like a chore. And for a multitude of reasons, you're more engaged in scrolling with your phone than worshiping God. The best word to describe all of this is apathy. This Easter, discover the one love, powerful enough to awaken what you thought was dead forever. By the end of this series, you'll have some tools, a community, and the hope you need to feel alive again.
Mikhail, the first time that my wife Jan and I had an argument, I thought our relationship was over, that it was ending. We were both high school students. I did not have very much experience in relationships. And we started arguing and I was like freaking out. I was like, right, this is over. Now, the backstory is, you know, I'm from West Michigan. I'm Dutch. I grew up in the Christian Reformed. We just didn't argue a whole lot in front of each other.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have any models of arguing or that, like, that was normal in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so Jana starts arguing with me, and I'm like, look, this is it. She's breaking up with me. and so I totally freaked out. I had no idea what was going on. I thought we were done, and spoiler alert, we were not done. Like,
no.
It is possible to have an argument and to work through it in a relationship. Mikhail, have you ever had that where, you know, you've experienced some sort of response based on your past experiences or lack of experiences?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of chuckle at this question a little bit because, you know, all of our responses are informed in some way by our past experiences. But those moments when you're sort of bringing the past into the present and like can't read the present situation because of those past situations, like, yes. And still, it's hard to narrow it down to one interesting.
Like, in this instance, right, I was feeling this because of this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that there have been times that I will interpret someone's nonverbal communication to believe that they're upset with me. Like, I asked Nathan a question, my husband, I asked him a question, and then he's like, just gives me a one-word answer, and I think, oh gosh, he's mad. And he's just tired, or, you know, he's just distracted by something else. But those past experiences of people communicating passive aggressively make it easy to believe that that's what's happening in
they
that
do.
Situation.
And this is, you know, for all of us, and this is why, you know, you mentioned you struggle with it, because how do you parse this out? For all of us, our life stories lie at the root of our responses. Our life stories lie at the root of our responses. Mm. And so our past experiences, they don't necessarily determine how we think or feel, but they certainly inform it.
Oh, yeah.
And have a big influence on how we're thinking or feeling in any given situation. And the bottom line is our stories matter. Mm-hmm. Our experiences matter. They've shaped us. And so today we're going to contemplate our own personal stories and our experiences as we look at some of the causes of apathy.
Yeah, we're in a series called Overcoming Apathy, and it's based on a book by Uche Onozor, who is a contemporary theologian and biblical scholar. Merriam-Webster defines apathy in two ways. It can be a lack of emotion or feeling, or it can be a lack of interest or concern.
Okay.
And synonyms for apathy might be like impassiveness or indifference to something.
And we all have this mm-hmm. in different areas. And today we're going to get at some of the causes. Now, as we think about causes, there's a branch of medicine that's called etiology. Mm-hmm. And etiology is basically the study of causes of diseases. And this is something that I really got into when I was a breast cancer researcher. We looked all the time at the etiology of breast cancer. And it's like the backstory for an illness.
Sure.
So etiology is figuring out why does a particular disease manifest in a particular person? And just as everybody has a story, every disease has a story. It has a history. It has a set of causes. And the backstory is important because it determines treatment.
Right.
And so part of the reason we'd always look at etiology in breast cancer is etiology would determine how you would treat a breast cancer. And sometimes you determine, too, like whether to treat. Because sometimes, you know, you might just decide, well, yeah, I have this, but I'm not going to do anything about it.
Right.
And that can be fine, too. The better the understanding of the cause of the disease, though, the better the treatment will be.
So today we're talking about, as you said, the causes of apathy. Apathy, I think, can feel mysterious sometimes. It can be frustrating.
can be.
There's usually some kind of backstory, though. There's usually an etiology. And so we're considering etiology in this circumstance because it's about treatment and improving care, promoting healing. And we're going to look at the possible backstory of our apathy. We're not doing that so that we can judge ourselves or others.
Like we're going to be really important.
If you don't hear anything else, like hear that. But we're looking with compassion for ourselves about the causes of apathy. And we're identifying the causes of apathy so that we can address it with compassion and care. So what we're moving toward in this series, Overcoming Apathy, is what Anna Zohr calls zeal. Mm-hmm. Zeal in the day-to-day is about being alive to the important things around us.
I love how he puts that. Like, I want to be alive to the important things.
Yeah.
Things that really matter.
Me too. And our verse for this series that focuses on zeal is from Paul, who wrote, "Don't hesitate to be enthusiastic. Be on fire in the spirit as you serve the Lord." And so this series is for those who want to be passionate about the things of God, but just can't seem to care enough.
Yeah. So let's take a moment and let's pause here to think about apathy versus zeal. Reflect on, you know, what are the things that we care about? Or maybe mm-hmm. we're like, I really can't care about that right now, whatever it might be. So here's our first question for discussion. What's one thing that you deeply care about? And or what's one thing you struggle to care very much about? Let's take a moment and let's talk about that.
So Anna Zohr outlined 7 causes of apathy. And these are the ways that our life stories lie at the root of our responses. Uh-huh. So our apathy is rooted in causes that come from our life stories. And these causes, as Anna Zohr says, could be these things: doubt, grief, lack of discipline, triviality, feelings of inadequacy, fragility, or lack of purpose. Rather than going through all 7 of these, we picked 4 that we're going to focus on. And those are triviality, feelings of inadequacy, fragility, and lack of purpose. Now, all 7 of these is a little bit more manageable, yes. We have a handout for those who are in person, but if you're joining us online, you can scan that QR code and download the handout. If you'd like to hear more about doubt, grief, lack of discipline as causes of apathy, those are all in the book, and so people can check that out.
Check those out, yep.
So the first cause of apathy, the story behind our apathy, it might be triviality.
Triviality. So as I think about triviality, I think about the Lego Movie, which came out many years ago. This was beloved by my kids. Your kids have seen it too. And there's this catchy and sarcastic song, right? Everything is awesome. And the main character, Emmett, as the song plays, he goes through this whole list of everyday events that he thinks are awesome. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is tongue-in-cheek, right? So like they include things like always using a turn signal. Awesome. Parking between the lines. Reading the headlines. Don't forget to smile. Always root for the local sports team and drink overpriced coffee. Awesome. Now, those things might be good. They might be helpful, worthwhile to do, but I'd hardly call them awesome, which is kind of the point of the song, right? So if everything is equally awesome, then the song reveals something about our world, and that's that we often lose touch with what is really meaningful. Mm-hmm. Let me put that another way. If everything is awesome, well, then everything ceases to be awesome.
Yeah. This is one of the problems, I think, in how we consume online content. Because
it definitely can be.
Big and small things, meaningful and meaningless things, they all get the same amount of airtime. Like, it's wild. I pulled out my cell phone while I was working on the segment to actually see what shows up in my Instagram feed or in my social media feeds. I saw clips from hockey games. Not super surprising.
That's not surprising at all if we know you.
Right. Yeah. I saw headlines about the Duggars and terrible things there. Mm-hmm. I saw funny memes like this one that reminded me of our Holy Habits. When we talked about contributing to a team, it says, "It's not that I think I'm too smart to ever get sucked into a cult. It's more that I know I'm unwilling to participate in anything resembling a group project under any circumstances."
Group projects, you gotta avoid them. Yep.
And then this one from Disappointing Affirmations: "You can do anything that you put your mind to, so long as your mind is not very creative."
Oh.
So okay. Got a little chuckle. And then yeah. It was like global politics and like, are we going into World War III? I mean, like.
All the things.
And it's difficult to give those the weight that they deserve. None of it is bad. Like laughing about a meme, that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But moving quickly from hockey to child sex abuse to funny memes to global war, that's really difficult to do well.
Yes, it is.
It's difficult to feel the bigness of some of these things that are actually a really, really big deal. Mm-hmm. As Anna Zohr writes, we're pummeled by triviality until we finally wave the white flag and surrender to apathy. Oof.
Okay.
So not everything matters equally. Some mm-hmm. things are significant and some things really aren't, just like some things are awesome and some things are not.
Some things are not really awesome.
And so as you'll see on your handout, each cause of apathy has some questions for us to consider. Those questions are a way of us diagnosing our apathy so we can decide what we want to do about it, or even if we want to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And again, we're using compassion to engage these things because our life stories lie at the root of our responses.
They do.
So when it comes to everything that is coming at us in a day-to-day situation, in our day-to-day lives, we're going to reflect on this with our past experiences. Am I carried away by relatively insignificant things? Am I overwhelmed by a flood of triviality?
Those are such important questions to ask, because losing sight of what really matters can lead to apathy. Mm-hmm. And so can feelings of inadequacy. So feelings of inadequacy, I would say they like fall under this broad category of feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And when we're overwhelmed, we feel inadequate to face whatever is before us, whatever that might be. And it's really easy to feel overwhelmed by the difficulty of making a difference, whether it's because the problems that we're facing are so big and mm-hmm. so challenging, or because of our own limitations or equipping. Like sometimes it can be both.
Yeah. So when we're overwhelmed, I think it can lead us often to feel like, well, why bother?
Why do anything?
If it's not going to make a difference, why would I do anything? So we have to believe that change is possible in order to work toward it.
Yeah, we do.
This reminds me, in January, South Lansing hosted Citizens for Prison Reform of Michigan for a lunch and learn. And so they came and shared with us about a lot of what they're doing. And they also shared, they set up a mock solitary confinement cell so that you can walk through it and visualize the experience. And for a lot of us, when we think about solitary confinement, we think that at its best, it's designed to keep people safe. Right? Like if someone is a threat to the people around them, isolate them so they can't hurt people. If someone is being threatened, isolate them so they can't get hurt. But the reality is that people are held in isolation for months or even years. And there's no way that you can, that's never good for your mental health.
That'd be really hard.
So if the goal is rehabilitation and we're actively damaging people's mental health, it creates a cycle of, I don't know what word to use. It feels hopeless. And the rehabilitative services that would typically be available are not available to those folks who really, really need it. And so it just compounds. So the people who really need the help are not getting the help. And then what motivation would they have to try to change, to try to be rehabilitated if they're not getting any services and they're in isolation? So it just makes me think of this whole idea of being overwhelmed, of feeling like nothing is possible, change isn't possible. And that can lead to apathy.
It can. Yeah, I think you gave a great example of something that's just like broken in our system. And like, what do you do? We have to believe that change is possible in order to work toward it. Now, that's not just for the world around us and for things like what's happening in prisons.
Right.
It's also true of us as individuals. There's a critical voice that we often hear in our head telling us, you will never change. Mm. Like this thing that you don't like about yourself or that you do, like it will always be that way. And that voice will compare us to others, often with very discouraging results. And it's very easy to feel hopeless in the midst of that voice speaking negativity to us. You know, if I don't think I can get better in some area of being a pastor, it's super tempting to just be like, I'm just going to avoid that. Like I want to get better in that area. Maybe I think I should get better, but I don't know if I can. And so I'll just avoid it. And that's not helpful. Our life stories, again, lie at the root of our responses. And so as we think about inadequacy and this like feeling of being overwhelmed, think about your own story and your own experiences and ask these questions. Do you size yourself up against other people or even your own ideals and come up lacking? And does that discourage you from doing meaningful things in the world around you?
So let's pause here just for a chance to reflect on these first two causes of apathy and how they might be part of our story, part of our responses. You can choose your own adventure and address either triviality or inadequacy in this question. So here's a question for discussion. When it comes to triviality, where have you gotten caught up in something that's trivial? And when it comes to inadequacy, where do you feel discouraged around doing something meaningful? Take a minute and talk about it. Triviality can lead to apathy, and feelings of inadequacy can also lead to apathy.
It can.
And so can this next word, which I think is going to require some explanation. What do you mean by fragility, Mark?
Oh, fragility. I wrestled with whether to include this word in this message. I don't like it. I don't like this word. And yet, the more I wrestled with it, the more I realized this is a word that can be a cause of apathy, and I couldn't come up with a better word for it. And so something that is fragile is something that is easy to break. And as I explored the word fragility, I was reminded of the Strong Like Water series that we did earlier this year. You know, we might mistakenly think that we are fragile, that we are easy to break. But all of us are stronger than we think. And that's really what I think Strong Like Water was about, was like all the different strength that we have. And this source of apathy, fragility, it's not based in truth. It is based in a lie that we often tell ourselves that I'm fragile. And one of the reasons we can become apathetic is life is hard. Like, it just is. And it takes courage to face hard things in an appropriate way. Now, that last part I think is key, right? Like, in an appropriate way. And this is what we also learned in Strong Like Water, that apathy can be a coping mechanism for things that are just too hard for us to deal with in a given moment. And not being apathetic is going to require some resilience. It is going to require some strength. And we drew on that in Strong Like Water. So, Mikhail, can you bring us back to Strong Like Water and tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, I feel like this is really, this is a tough topic. It's tough to summarize. And in the Q&A that I had with Andi, she talked about how numbing our feelings, like when we just dissociate or don't feel our feelings, it's usually for a reason, usually for a good reason. Like there's something that is there that like is too much. So before we can begin feeling again and begin engaging our feelings, we need to develop some safety, some grounding, compassionate resources, a feeling of like, if I engage this, I'm not going to fall apart. So as we begin to develop those resources, we begin then to have the capacity to face the hard things that we've been keeping at arm's length in an appropriate way. And we find that, and we find that we have so much more strength than we thought when we do that. So when we bring it back to apathy, numbing can be a kind of situational strength. We talked about situational strength, transitional strength, and integrated strength. And situational strength is that those coping mechanisms, that like gut response to things that keeps us safe. And so numbing, it serves a purpose for survival. But if we stay there and we believe we don't have any choice, we become aware that that's what we're doing, and we're like, no, I don't have anything else that I can do, we wind up hurting ourselves and maybe even hurting others. And one of the ways that we hurt ourselves and others is through apathy and through just not engaging in the things that are around us. So recognizing the strength that we do have and moving along that flow from transitional to situational to integrated, it allows us to face those hard things and maybe even thrive in the midst of them. Anna Zor says, if uncertainties are certain and hardships are our common lot, how we respond to them becomes the critical issues, the critical issue. So if uncertainties are certain and everyone experiences hardships, we can try to run the other way and avoid them. And sometimes we need to do that. But sometimes we need to turn and face them and address them with safety and compassionate resources.
We do. A group of researchers that did a study on peanut allergies looked at this in children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, there's so many allergies now. Like, it seems like it's on a rise, right? So yeah. The researchers want to look at this and, like, see what they could learn about it. And so beginning with a group of infants, the researchers had half the parents expose their kids to peanuts, peanut products. And they had half the kids where the parents avoided any sort of exposure to peanuts. And when the children were 5 years old, they tested them for the prevalence of allergies in those two groups, the mm-hmm. kids who had been exposed to peanut products and the kids whose parents had helped them avoid peanut products. And about 3% of the group that was exposed to peanuts developed an allergy to peanuts, about 3% of the kids. In contrast, the group that avoided peanuts, 17% of those kids developed an allergy to peanuts. And the researchers concluded that rather than weakening children, exposure to the threat of peanuts actually strengthened them and helped them to not develop an allergic reaction. And I think this principle is, it's true in all sorts of things. It's true in the fragility that we're talking about. It's also true in terms of vaccinations.
Yeah. Like,
this is why vaccines work. Exposure to a small dose of weakened virus is an appropriate exposure that produces an immune response. And that's an appropriate challenge to our immune system, and it makes us stronger in the long run. It takes courage to face hard things in an appropriate way.
Yeah. Apathy can be a coping mechanism that shields us from getting hurt further or getting more disappointed, and that can be a good thing.
It can be.
And it has a dark side, in that the more we avoid hard things, the more difficult it can be to engage those hard things. Mm-hmm. That avoiding requires then even more protection, which even makes it harder. It's just like a cycle. It compounds. So resilience is a strength that helps us to get through those hard things in life. And Strong Like Water teaches us that our resilient strength can grow and develop. It's like a muscle that we work. So here are some questions for us to begin to reflect on fragility and whether that's part of our story that has led to apathy. Do you avoid certain issues or even people out of fear of getting hurt? Do you care less and less about more and more things?
So our avoidance of hard things, not being willing to engage them in an appropriate way, mm-hmm. can lead to apathy. And our final source of apathy, cause of apathy, is the lack of purpose. Mm-hmm. And this is incredibly important. When we were preparing this message, you know, this is one of the sections that we were tempted to take out. And I do think this is worth talking about, though, which is why I kept it in here. The sense of purpose is what drives us to sustained, meaningful action in life. And we all need this. Like, this is really what makes life worth living. But I'll tell you, as pastors, we especially need this. One of the things that pastors do is we regularly return to our call stories. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of like our purpose story. And so, Mikkel, give us a quick synopsis of your call story as a pastor.
Well, as you know, I grew up in a church setting that didn't allow women to be pastors. And so for a long time, I actually thought that churches that had women pastors were like being led astray and like following the culture and probably like living in sin or something. So about 13 years ago.
Thank God we can change our minds.
I know. Isn't that?
Yeah.
So about 13 years ago, my family went through a really challenging year, and something about that experience left me open to reconsidering some of the ideas that I had previously held to. And I began to wonder what it means to be made in the image of God as a woman, when at that point I only was really hearing God talked about with like he, him pronouns and male ideas. And like, now I have lots of ideas of like how God is mother, but I didn't at that time. That mm-hmm. wasn't something we talked about. And I got a book recommendation after posing that question. It wasn't exactly related to that question. But the thesis of the book was essentially that we don't get to gatekeep the Holy Spirit. So if the Holy Spirit gives someone gifts for leading, for preaching, for pastoring, that we don't get to say, well, Spirit, I think you got it wrong.
That's true.
Person actually can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so basically, you know, if women have gifts of preaching or pastoring or leading, then they should use those gifts. And it was at that time that I was like, oh, wait, I think I might have some of those gifts. And I think that if I had been a man, I would have wanted to be a pastor. And that was really the beginning of like recognizing that that was part of my story and part of who I was and part of God's gifting to me. And so there wasn't like one huge moment, but it was more like a series of individual small moments and nudgings and affirmations.
Mm. Thank you for sharing your story. I love your story, and I think it's so important that you share that story again and again as a woman who is a pastor, and then we get to hear that. And the call to become a pastor is a really huge thing.
Yeah.
And at times, we cling to that call as pastors because pastoral ministry can be really challenging as we go through it. I often tell people that as a pastor, I've faced way harsher criticism than anything I faced as a cancer researcher. You know, we were trained to like tear each other's work apart, and pastors face way more criticism than I ever did as a breast cancer researcher. But the thing is, you know, in the moments when stuff is hard, it can be tempting to turn to apathy. Mm-hmm. And that call, that sense of meaning, that sense of purpose helps us persist in the midst of hard things. And a pastor's call is just one example of the meaning and the purpose that we all need. Mm-hmm. You know, I was privileged to know Jana's grandmother. I have a picture on the screen of Jana's grandmother with baby Drew, our firstborn son. He's now 20. And Jana's grandmother hung on really, I think, in part to see her first great-grandchild and to be able to hold him. And so I have that picture of Drew being held by his great-grandma. And Jana's grandmother, her name was Agnes. And toward the end of her life, she had a really hard time seeing. She had a really hard time hearing. Her life was pretty isolated, and it was tough. She was in a lot of pain all the time. And yet in the midst of that, she was known in the facility where she was for being kind to her caretakers. Mm. She knew their stories. She would ask them about their families, about the things that were going on in their life. She would regularly pray for the people around her. And to me, it's just a beautiful example of how even as she aged, she found meaning and purpose in the people that she interacted with and how she could make an impact on their lives. And no matter what stage of life we are in, we need that. We need that meaning and that purpose in life.
I love that. We all need purpose no matter what season of life we're in. And without that purpose, we have no reason to grow and to take risks and to persevere.
Yeah.
So we have one final set of questions for folks to reflect on around purpose and your life experiences or story. Do your daily activities feel directionless, as if you're being carried by the winds of the day? Is it difficult to answer the why questions of your life?
The bottom line is staying engaged with all the important things of life, it can be really hard. Mm-hmm. And so we've worked through different causes of apathy today to be compassionate with ourselves, but also to figure out like, why are sometimes other things that I want to care about, but I don't care about them? Now, we didn't cover all these in detail, but again, some causes of apathy could be doubt, grief, lack of discipline, triviality, feelings of inadequacy, fragility, or a lack of purpose. And as we look through that list, I know that at least for me, some of those resonate with me, and I'm sure that they resonate for everyone who's watching this. Our life stories are at the root of our responses.
And as we look at that list, we have a choice. We have a choice to go along with apathy or a choice to engage. We can't engage everything, and we don't have to. Part of this choice is identifying the backstory of our apathy, because without knowing our story, we don't really know how to move forward to something better. So we started that work today, but there's more work to do.
Yeah, in that sense, this message has been a little bit different because we're like giving each other resources to engage this. And in order to do that, like it's gonna require some deep reflection. And it might even require like some counseling or some therapy to look at our causes of apathy. So we've given everyone a handout. And again, you can go to the QR code if you want a digital copy of that. If you're in person today, we've got that handout for people. So you can think more about the causes of apathy and think through, like, what do I want to do about my apathy? And again, this is all rooted in our life stories or at the root of our responses.
We'll get more into the cure for apathy next week. But today, I want to remind us that we're in this challenge together. There are people around you who care about you. There are people around you who want to be kind to you. May we be a community that engages the hard things of life because we rely on each other, because we're honest with each other, and because we're pointing each other toward what really matters. Let's be honest together about how, about the good and the bad in our lives, because our life stories lie at the root of our responses.
They do, and as we look at those life stories, again, we're gonna be compassionate with ourselves, we're gonna be compassionate with each other and with our stories. And as we do that, let's just not stay where we are, but let's move toward together, toward what Paul describes, where Paul says, "Don't hesitate to be enthusiastic. Be on fire in the spirit as you serve the Lord."